And away we go. It is a Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour. Yes, we are keeping our eyes on the sky. And it is Tuesday. It is Election Day. The polls are open until 6 p.m. this evening, rain or shine. And then I would think, oh, by 8 o'clock or so, we would have everything tallied up and ready to go. You can head to the county's website if you are absolutely positively needing those numbers as soon as possible. If not, you can follow your favorite journalists on Twitter and or X or Facebook or wherever, and they will probably pop those numbers out once they are ready to go. We have a special presentation for you tonight. Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. He usually meets with us on Thursdays and Fridays, but since I am taking off after I turn the switches off here tonight for the rest of the week, he has done us a great favor and come in on a Tuesday Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour, the first Tuesday of the month of May. Big graduation weekend in the books. The baseball season is rolling along. IU is supposed to play baseball tonight. Mother Nature is taking care of that. They will head to Lincoln on the weekend. Maybe we'll talk a little IU baseball as things go on. But good afternoon, buddy. It's been a busy few days for Kurt Cignetti. Once the portal closes, well, those stuck inside of it need to pop themselves out. We'll get to a little hoops talk as well. How are you today?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm great. We'll get out of town, sneak out of town here for a couple of days and come back. And, well, I miss a little Pacer basketball, but where I'm going, I hope, has television. So that's the good news. But Kurt Cignetti and the gang, we knew that everybody had to be in the transfer portal by midnight last Wednesday. And here we are almost a week later, and guys are starting to find themselves, well, at least on the football side, well, and some basketball guys as well. The portal's closed for entry, but it's not closed for exiting. And here come the James Madison Dukes, more of them heading to Bloomington.
Yeah, I think the big one, I think there have been a couple, but the big one's D'Angelo Pons. You know, if you put stock in these things, he was a mid-high three-star transfer, according to 24/7 Sports. I think a couple different places named him a freshman All-American. I know just based on some stuff that I saw on Twitter, Pro Football Focus seemed pretty high on his freshman season. Not the biggest guy in the world, listed around 5'9", 5'10". But, you know, it's not just a familiarity thing. You know, I think they took a couple other transfers from JMU that had kind of been a little bit more, you know, sort of depth pieces, younger guys, maybe developmental pieces. Pons was, though, if you look at James Madison and just like basically if you did the most basic thing you could and you looked at James Madison's cumulative statistics from last season defensively. And I remember doing this back in the winter when obviously Indiana was moving a lot of pieces around in a short space of time. Pons was, I'm going back through this while we're talking, Pons was by and large, I believe, the only sort of substantial contributor for JMU last season defensively, let's say top, you know, seven, top eight in tackles and things like that, that wasn't either out of eligibility, because I think there are a couple guys like Jeremy Croma and I think Jalen Green who are out of eligibility, either just could not keep going or had come to Indiana. There might have been one or two kind of in that top, like I said, like eight or nine that either are still at JMU or transferred somewhere else. But the point is, Pons was, when you looked at James Madison's just sort of production charts, and I'm talking in the most basic possible sense, but when you looked at the guys that had been key pieces for JMU defensively last year, Pons was one of the only ones that wasn't either graduating, heading for the draft, or heading for Indiana. And now, obviously, he is committed and is going to bring, you know, even more familiarity with Brian Haynes' defense and potentially, you know, I mean, he's the kind of player that you would imagine might slot in, you know, pretty quickly into the starting lineup.
Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the X, joining us here on a special edition Tuesday afternoon. Now, the timing of all of these are all, well, you can probably each transfer portal combat, as you refer to it, has its own story. Did any of this, was this a domino effect, perhaps, of Kobe Minor leaving the secondary and a spot opening up, or was it just a, hey, I looked around and I went back to my old boss because I'm comfortable with him? Do we ever get the inside and in how these things really work?
Well, you know, the first thing to say is Pons didn't enter the portal in the winter window, at least not that I'm aware of. And, you know, sometimes guys can't for, you know, they got to do something academically, or they, you know, they just kind of got to ride something out for a semester or whatever. It's also worth saying I've heard Indiana's, you know, sort of NIL commitments in football have increased noticeably even since Kurt Cignetti's hiring. So maybe Indiana, you know, once a player like Pons hits the portal, maybe Indiana is able to, you know, be sort of aggressive in a way that if you're just talking about divvying up resources back in the winter wouldn't have been quite as possible. But there's also, you know, it which comes first in these situations? Does Indiana go back into the portal because Kobe Minor leaves? Does Kobe Minor leave because Indiana said, hey, we're probably going to go back in the portal and we're looking for, you know, some guys that, if we're being honest, are probably going to play over you. You know, if you're comfortable with that, you can stay. If not, then, you know, then fair enough. But I just think it, you know, it's one of those where there's probably never a firm answer to that question, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do completely, but sometimes you just connect the dots and it might be just that simple. Now, the other interesting part of Kurt Cignetti's philosophy, and I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but it continues to focus on guys who have tangible results, composite stats on a playing field, as opposed to stars next to their name who have been waiting in the wings and looking for playing time. The fan in me says, well, that should help Indiana immediately because these guys have some tape, proven quantities of things they've done on the field, even though it might not be at the Big Ten level. Is that a good way for fans to look at the developments here over the last few months?
I mean, that's something that Kurt Cignetti has said, is that he believes, you know, in the portal, production matters more than potential. That doesn't mean he's never going to take, you know, a guy that, you know, maybe has some of that potential, hasn't quite realized it, or, you know, maybe even sometimes just a player who was really highly rated went somewhere. You know, I saw Indiana got a visit from a defensive lineman from Alabama who I think was either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman this past season. You know, that may not be a case of, you know, potential not leading to production. It might just be that he spent a couple years at Alabama, decided it wasn't for him, wanted to, you know, move on, coaching change, et cetera. You know, and Kurt Cignetti's own thoughts can evolve on this as he maybe, you know, as what he thinks is required to win in the Big Ten as compared to, you know, James Madison, for example, you know, that might evolve as well. But, you know, his stated philosophy, he's made kind of no bones about this. He's said it multiple times since his hiring, is that he believes in the idea of production over potential. And that if you've put it on tape, if you've put it on paper, even at a lower level, you know, that there's maybe he's going to place in a lot of cases, probably not every case, but in a lot of cases, he's going to place a lot more emphasis on guys that he can point to what they have already done and sort of say, we think that he can go up a level and replicate a lot of that impact, rather than, you know, maybe assuming that or taking a bit of a risk on the idea of a guy who has the potential, has the measurables, maybe he was well thought of as a recruit, but he's not necessarily proven it at whatever level he's been at. It seems like Cignetti prefers the former.
Need a little film, need a little track record, and that's the way Indiana can get things moving. August 31st will be football game number one here in Bloomington to open up a 12-game schedule. 8 of those games are in Bloomington, so that's exciting. First one, only one on the road on the early days, is at UCLA. Give me quickly the football calendar from this point forward. Do we expect more transfer portal movings and groovings. When does everybody come back to lift weights? And we know camp opens, what, the first weekend of August? So that's, I think I know that one. It's the rest of the summer timeline that has me confused.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure when Indiana is going to have its Huber event. It always feels like
that's going to be the last week in July or last week in this month.
Okay, it's very last week of this month. I'm seeing it now. It's May 29th. It always feels like Huber is kind of the turning of the page. Sometimes baseball's still going on when Huber, you know, when that. I guess for people that don't know, Indiana annually in late May, early June has and you know, relative to what you and I would pay, an expensive sort of per head or per table fundraising event down at Huber's Orchard and Winery in Borden. And that is annually one of the big sort of fundraising, donor engagement, booster engagement events on the athletics calendar. It's in the middle of the summer, so there's nothing that it can conflict with other than potentially like a baseball or a softball run of some kind. It is, like I said, it is a high dollar amount. I think in the past, I want to say it's been something like $1,000 or $1,200 for a table. So you're talking about, you know, a substantial amount of money to collect basically just in one night. Historically, traditionally, both the football and the men's basketball coaches, sometimes other coaches as well, attend the event, speak at the event, and speak to media at the event. And from the media perspective and just sort of the rhythm of the athletic calendar, that has over the years, is probably the better way to say it, sort of become the what is the best way of thinking about this? The sort of hinge point between one athletic season and another. That's when, you know, we start to ask the football coach, the men's basketball coach, the women's basketball coach questions about, like, when are your athletes coming back to campus? What are you looking for in the summer? How are you going to start sort of building toward your season? And I mention that because between graduation and Huber, there's obviously a handful of sports still playing, baseball, softball, you know, golf, track, spring sports coming to the end of their seasons. But it's really otherwise very quiet. And this is kind of the, you know, most athletes are off campus. Summer school hasn't started for the vast majority of them and won't until either the end of May or the beginning of June. And then from there, when you talk about calendars, that's when we will start to knock off some, you know, some mile markers, like when freshmen arrive, when whole teams arrive. You know, football will do their summer recruiting camps, and there'll probably be a raft of commitments in the summer for football. There typically are. We'll see if this staff's any different. And then obviously once we get to July, we'll hit Big Ten football media days, and that's when we will all start turning the lights back on for the college football season. So this is basically, I guess, at least from a reporter's perspective, about as quiet as the calendar gets. This kind of early to mid-May, again, you've got a few sports still ongoing. I think I'm going to write something about baseball later this week as an example. But there's also just, you know, most of these – programs have sort of broken up for what, you know, what constitutes their off season anymore. It's a lot shorter than it used to be, but this is kind of it right now.
Zach Osterman on the X marks the spot. Well, that's Twitter, and you know that, and you can also find him indystar.com. Please support local journalism, even if it is a quiet time of the year. Well, you mentioned baseball there. Let's talk about the Hoosiers. First time since 2002, they won a three-game series in West Lafayette. Jeff Mercer's crew is kind of, you've got the, you pay your money, take your chances. You have ridden the ride. They had beaten some ranked teams earlier in the year, a neutral and on road venues. They had struggled at home in some midweek games. They picked up a couple decent wins in midweek games. But here they are, 12-6, tied for second in the Big Ten Conference and heading to Lincoln this weekend. No game tonight because of the weather in the area. Cincinnati, the Big 12 opponent now. That game will not be rescheduled, but that's a good rest bit then to get everybody and your pitching ready to go for a massive, massive series in Lincoln starting on Friday. Saturday and Sunday's games are on the Big Ten Network, so that's exciting for baseball fans. And, well, Nebraska's second, Indiana's second, 12-6. They're trailing 13-5 Illinois. And from everything I've seen, Zach, boy, they're right on the cusp in the land of RPI or whatever they call it in college baseball. Why don't they just go ahead and win two out of three here and take that series wins? That's five in a row now. Let's take it up to six or seven after the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it does often seem to me like Indiana seasons, and this is across multiple coaches, you know, just really kind of wind up, I don't want to say peaking in May, because we've got to see them do it to be sure that's what's happening, but very much sort of powering into May with a lot kind of still on the table. You mentioned some of the early season wins, some of the early season losses. You know, Indiana probably did just enough, I would bet, from an RPI perspective, you know, in terms of maybe some of that non-conference work back in February and early March, that as long as it can keep winning in the Big Ten, can make a difference. I mean, this has been, it's been a bit of a funky season. Like, they've had some injuries, particularly to their pitching staff. They've had some guys that you know, went into at different points some, you know, pretty remarkable slumps for how good of hitters they were. On the other hand, they've had some guys, some younger players in particular, that have really stepped up and kind of filled some of those holes. And there have been a couple times where it felt a little bit like maybe the season was staring over the edge just a touch, but Indiana's pulled it back. You mentioned kind of the run they've been on now, particularly in Big Ten play. And what makes this weekend so important is not just, you know, where Indiana's the Big Ten standings. They're what, one game back, I believe. And there's a real kind of log jam if you look at the overall Big Ten baseball standings. Indiana is currently 12-6. They're tied with Nebraska and Purdue. Iowa's just behind them at 13-8, and Illinois is just ahead of them at 13-5. So you've got five teams with at least 13 wins. Then you've got Michigan at 11-7. They're coming to Bloomington in a couple weeks. You've got a couple teams, you know, kind of floating around 500 in the conference. It's funny because this is the first year that I have looked at, and every case is different, but obviously I've covered Big Ten baseball for a long time. And we've talked for so many years about, you know, how impressive it's been to watch the conference kind of build itself up with some of the Big Ten Network money, improve facilities, recruit a little bit better, get better at scheduling. Suddenly everybody's RPI climbs a little bit more. Well, this is like the first year where it almost kind of feels like the Big Ten being good is a little bit of its own worst enemy in a sense. And what I mean by that is, there are just a lot of teams out there that can beat up on each other. Like I'm looking at the, I'm looking at the Division I RPI numbers on NCAA.com. 10 of the 13 Big Ten teams are 103 or better in RPI. 7 of 13 are in the top 70, including Purdue at 69, Rutgers at 66, Ohio State at 63, Indiana at 62, and Illinois at 60. The big one is Nebraska. Nebraska's 21st in the RPI. That's what makes this weekend so important for Indiana. It's not just the potential for trying to stay in this Big Ten race, maybe, you know, nose ahead of a Nebraska, maybe get level with Illinois if you can, but also because these are the kinds of wins you don't always get the chance, frankly, to obtain in conference play. There aren't always a ton of, you know, kind of genuine quality RPI wins, especially on the road. And it's, you know, it's selection process is not quite like it is with the men's and women's basketball tournaments. RPI is kind of king in college baseball, but the opportunity to go on the road and against a team in the RPI top 25 and, you know, potentially add some quality wins. When you look at Illinois' schedule, they've got three against Iowa this weekend. Iowa's probably underperformed this season. I think they were, if I'm not mistaken, they were picked to win the conference, but they've still got some really good arms. And then Illinois has got to go to Purdue next weekend. Well, Indiana, as I said, has got Michigan at home next weekend. Indiana's going to have a decent RPI opportunity when Michigan comes to town. Obviously, that'll also be Tracy Smith's return to Bloomington. But this weekend, both in terms of the Big Ten race, and the opportunity Indiana gave itself, especially with that comeback at Purdue on Sunday, and also in terms of you know, maybe shoring up that NCAA tournament resume, which, you know, didn't get a lot of help during that sort of, you know, mid-March and, I don't know, a few weeks there, that sort of swoon that Indiana had before they kind of found their feet again. This weekend would go a long way if you could take two or three, or obviously if you could sweep.
All the games in conference play matter. That's why that comeback against Penn State was a big deal. Obviously, the comeback on Sunday, that's a bigger deal as well. The other interesting stat that maybe you can help me translate, I saw somewhere that the Big Ten was the fourth best RPI conference or somewhere in that neighborhood, but yet they're only going to get maybe two teams, maybe three in the tournament. Is that normal or is that northern bias? I mean,
that is a low number. And I'm looking at Warren Nolan for to your questions about RPI conferences. Here's RPI. I think this is just going to be the – sorry, we're doing this live. Again, I do sort of wonder a little bit if almost like – I don't want to say the Big Ten is too good, but I think what I mean more is that the Big Ten is kind of in this place where – I think Warren Nolan's got the Big Ten Conference ELO, which is, I'm not exactly sure what that is. Forgive me, but it's six.
It's the Electric Light Orchestra.
And yeah, it's exactly.
Jeff Lynn. I think Jeff Lynn is the guy that administers that.
He pulls the bucket hat up from over his eyes just long enough to do the calculations. But to give you a sense, it goes SEC, ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, Sun Belt, Big Ten. So, you know, it basically outside the schools that are traditionally going to have, or the conferences rather, that are traditionally either powerhouses or, like in the Big 12's case, just going to have enough teams in warm weathers that can, you know, lift up the conference. The Big 10 is up there. I can remember years when the Big 10 hasn't even been in the top 10. I'm not saying the Big 10 is like too good, but what I would say is I look at those, not just the records, but the RPI numbers. And I just see a Big Ten where there are fewer weekends off. And there are, you know, I mean, even if you want to go, I mean, geez, like, seriously, like Rutgers is a great example. They're 4-14 in the conference, but they're 66 in RPI. But the only team that is a genuine drag on the conference at this moment in time is Northwestern, which is dead last and is not even, I think, in the – I can't even find them in the RPI. I guess Penn State's pretty low too. But the point is, it's unusual for the league to kind of not have any, just sort of, I don't know if you want to say guarantees or whatever. It's unusual for the league to have so many teams that are so close together, and all of them probably with some sort of argument for at least being on the tournament bubble. And I think a little bit of what you're seeing this year is a league that is capable of beating itself up a little bit more and is capable, therefore, of, you know, potentially, and we'll see. I mean, listen, we talk about this sometimes too with basketball, both on the men's and women's side. You know, once every two or three years, we get surprised when the selection, we have a conference over here that we say, there's just a lot of teams with iffy resumes there. And then it turns out we get to selection show and the committee has decided that it actually believes in that conference. And instead of seeing a bunch of teams that haven't been able to separate themselves, it says, actually, those are all just good teams that have been beating up on each other in a conference that we rate higher than you think. And now suddenly, where you thought five teams were going to get in from that conference, eight are getting in. The Big Ten could wind up in a situation like that. It's a little bit more difficult when you're not going to necessarily ever be a peer to a Pac-12. Well, I guess they will be soon. But an SEC or an ACC, you know, conferences that are just going to have a little bit more warm weather, a little bit more of what you'd expect to, you know, sort of talent to congregate in those areas. But I do think it's possible that we kind of wind up in a situation like if there were a baseball NIT, and there's not, but if there was,
we'll start it.
You'd see like six or seven Big Ten teams make it because there is this weird sort of confluence that the conference doesn't always have. Usually it's three or four teams that, even as the conference has gotten better overall, still sort of separate themselves and make it clear like they are above the rest. this year you have a tighter congregation, maybe 1 through 8, even 1 through 9. And that's, again, not even necessarily counting a team like Rutgers, which is really bad in the conference, but has a great RPI, went 24-22-7 in the non-conference. It's maybe just a conference that's beating up on itself a little too much.
Conversely, you know, Auburn's 4-20 right now in the SEC, and they'll get into the NCAA tournament because, well, they have 20 losses to SEC teams. That's how it works down there. They put in what? They got 16 teams, 14 of them will get in the tournament because all they say is, well, we beat up on each other. So that only works in certain conferences, and that's fine.
Well, and some of that's historic. Some of it, to be fair, is just, you know, again, like baseball is a sport that has annually been weighted toward the South and the West. It just has, because that's where the talent, not just where the talent congregates, but to a large extent where the talent is. Not that you can't find good players in the Midwest or the Northeast, but just it makes, you know, climatological sense that there are going to be more good baseball players in areas of the country where you can play baseball 12 months of the year.
Let's do the new Mason-Dixon line for baseball then. We'll have a northern champion play the southern champion, and we'll do it in, I don't know. Well, it'd have to be in the South because that's how
– This sounds like feudal England. I'm a little bit worried about
it. It does. Behind this stone wall we have over here, roses and – white roses and red roses and everything else. All right, so Indiana, the best thing they can do as of this moment is just continue to win games and take it out of the committee's hands. That's the best way to do it. Go win the Big Ten tournament, which will take place in Omaha, somewhere in Middle America, wrapping up the Sunday of the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500 right here on WGCL, and then Selection Monday will be Memorial Day. Great catching up with you, my friend. I appreciate you making the special time for us this week. We're out of here. We're on vacation. We'll be back next week. I'll talk to you then.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Have a great vacation.
That's Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star. Reds baseball, weather permitting, will be starting right around the corner. Stay tuned for, the pregame, whatever it may be. And we hope we get some baseball in tonight. Reds and Diamondbacks, 6:10 pregame for a 6:40 first pitch. You'll have Zach Gelb, Infinity Sports, in my place for the next 3 days, and I'll be back on Monday. Have a great Tuesday night. Reds baseball is next.